This is Abnormal Entertainment.
Party people, here we are with another episode of the Atomic Fallout Society.
And off we are going.
I am your host this week, Brian, the Professor Smith. And joining me, as always, and actually welcome back from a short hiatus, David, the human beast, Sabal.
Cosplay Heroes sucks.
And then we also have a special guest this week because, as you can tell, there is no Tony. That's why I'm bringing us into the show.
No Tony.
So this week we brought back our other Filipino friend.
Exactly, the clone. You're bringing back
the clone. That's right. Episode 98 today is going to have Christopher Lily Lilagan.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hey, he got it right.
Thank you. He did.
So anyways, guys, today we've got a lot of stuff actually to cover. You've got a couple big events from DC that start, or a big event from DC that started this week, and a big event from Marvel as well.
Yeah,
kicking off.
It is.
So without further ado and without much banter here at the beginning, we're going to get straight into the reviews for you. So, David, what are you bringing us this week?
Okay, well, we're starting off from Marvel, of course. I'm gone for 2 weeks, and my first issue back is actually a Marvel issue. Is X-Men Battle of the Atom, Chapter 1, Issue 1.
Ugh.
By Brian Michael Bendis, Frank Cho, and Stuart Immonen and Wade Von Grambaja. I think I got that right.
If not, you were close enough. Fuck it. Keep going.
But, all right. So, this is actually the big event for Marvel right now. We're coming off of Age of Ultron. And, yeah. I know, Chris. I know.
I'm sorry.
But, I guess people at Marvel figured, you know what? Age of Ultron didn't do too well. We tried to be original. So let's go ahead and go back and revisit another storyline that we could just hammer out and hash out in a couple of issues. And that is Days of Future Past. I'm sorry, but it's called Battle of the Atom this time around. What we have here is Brian Michael Bendis.
Ooh, pretty.
Honestly, retelling the story of Days of Future Past. We start off the issue with Ilyan Rasputin, who is part of Scott Summers' team on, I guess you could say, the evil side of the X-Men or whatever. But she apparently goes into the future to go see if the future is worth fighting for. And what she sees is pretty much nothing's changed and Days of Future Past still happens. However, she does see a new team actually leading the way, and this team is actually being introduced in Battle of the Atom. And what we have, we haven't really gotten full name. What we got is a female version of Zorn, old man Deadpool, a cloaked Charles Xavier, a older Moira MacTaggert, and an older Hope Summers, and what looks to be a really demonic-looking beast. And I don't know what to call what's behind them.
That's
maybe a
like
white
nature?
Thing. There you go, a white thing.
A white, like Brian.
So dumb.
But so we have that. We have the battle for the Atom open up this way by actually Ilyana going into the future and seeing if everything is worth fighting for. Then we cut to present day. And basically have this really disjointed explanation of what's going on so far. Obviously, the main difference that they're trying to force here is the fact that Charles Xavier, the founder of the X-Men, is dead. And the X-Men are split in two with basically each side representing a different philosophy of human relations and mutant relations, which honestly is getting really old. But they also make they also allude to the fact that the past original X-Men are now in the future, are actually in the present day, and have refused to go back into the past. So where does this lead us in the X-Men universe? And it leads us into the Battle of the Atom. Honestly, I mentioned this beforehand to... I asked this question to Brian and Chris because I'm really, really... I think Brian Michael Bendis is kind of, you know, he's ran out of blank checks for me. I always thought Brian Michael Bendis is like one of the best writers in the industry right now. Whenever people said, oh, Bendis is fantastic, I'd never really argue it. But then I actually asked my cohorts, what exactly is the best Brian Michael Bendis story?
None of them.
And honestly, I have to agree with Brian, except Chris brought up a good point.
I'm going to go with Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ultimate Spider-Man was good.
It brought him back to his teenage roots, man. Like, I mean, that's...
And that
pretty
was a good. It was a good retelling. Yeah. It was a good retelling of that character. And it
came about in the right time, I think, too. You know, with like the release of the new Spider-Man movie. You know, with Tobey Maguire at the time.
Yeah,
really
and
nice.
And let's face it. I mean, like, if it wasn't for Ultimate Spider-Man, there would be no Ultimates.
Right.
Because like, that's what actually started the whole Ultimate franchise was Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right.
So besides that, I can't really think of anything that Brian Michael Bendis has done that's really good.
Kill off everything. he's killed off quite a few characters.
He's killed off characters, and honestly,
willy nilly,
taking a look at the most epic storylines that Marvel has produced with him at the helm,
yeah,
they haven't been very good. They've been meh. They've been very average at best. So we're here with Battle of the Atom, which focuses on the X-Men. Which my next question for that is: we're coming off of the thing of Age of Ultron, which was supposed to affect the whole Marvel universe.
Mm.
Now we're going to jump into another story that has nothing to do with Age of Ultron. In fact, we're going to do, but here's the thing. All they're doing is just going back and just rehashing Days of Future Past. Okay, what are we going to fight for? The fight for the future. Something happens in the future. They come back and they have to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, my favorite thing that I've ever heard that I always tell people is like what Brian said about Age of Ultron. They turned Wolverine into Homer Simpson, meaning they made time travel stupid.
Yeah.
Time travel is for the stupid. Okay, let's go to Battle of the Atom. What are we going to deal with? Time travel. Like it didn't work in the last storyline.
Yeah.
Everyone was confused about it the last time, so let's go ahead and do another time travel story.
Like, you've already made this plot device a joke.
A joke. It's pretty much a Marvel joke. I'm like going, okay, I'm thinking, Brian, do you know how many issues they're going for Battle of the Atom?
You know, I think it's like 8 or 10.
It's 8 or 10, just like Age of Ultron.
Yeah, it's about the same.
So after that 8 or 10, another time travel story is going to happen? You know, what are we going to get? Are we going to have... Well, obviously, we got the hunger going on, and all the universes are colliding. Everyone wants to destroy the Earth because, hey, it's our fault that the time stream continuum is all fucked up as it is. Yet we look at Wolverine and go, donut? You want a donut? And then, so, now, I want to actually preface this by saying that I really dig all new X-Men. I really did really enjoy the series All New X-Men. The problem with this is I really think it's getting redundant now.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's really... In fact, like in the middle of it, and I'm going to spoil it because Captain's not here, so he can't stop me, but there's one point in this damn story that I'm like going, really? They're just going to say, oh, it's okay. It's all right. But at one point in the story, we finally get to see young Scott from the past die. And what happens to older Scott if younger Scott dies?
Wouldn't he just disappear?
He winks out.
Like Back to the Future style.
Yeah, he just winks out Back to the Future style. Now, you'd think, hey, that's an important point in this story.
Yeah.
That has to be a milestone event. You know, everyone's shocked. Oh my God, Scott's gone. No, we're next panel. All of a sudden, oh, he's back. How?
What?
Well, this mutant just miraculously pulled him back from the apparently the ether and put his soul back into his body. And didn't even wait a couple pages. It just next page. Oh, he's back. All right. That was a real waste of time. And, you know, I'm like going.
I love Disney. Now nobody dies. Yeah. Nothing dies.
The one thing that ticks me off about it, too, is the fact that in all new X-Men, if you've been reading that series, that's been like one of the major things is like, oh, my God, if Scott were to die, if his past self were to die, what would happen?
Yeah.
And they constantly were alluding to this. And even Scott Summers was like going, I don't want to find out. Well, we find out, and it only takes about a page of resolution. And Scott's just like standing there going, what happened? And literally, he literally looks at everyone and says, what happened? After he just winks out for a brief moment and then gets brought back.
So dumb.
And then
it makes perfect sense, right?
No.
Go
makes no sense.
Fuck yourself. You're a reader. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, that's how I feel Brian Michael Bendis is treating the reader at this point with his writing, especially coming off of major Marvel storyline after storyline.
So he's just
like,
lazy.
It's laziness. It's absolute laziness. You're remaking a old storyline in Days of Future Past. Okay. Then on top of that, you're taking other storylines and just basically making them not important anymore.
Well,
so
the new movie's coming out soon.
Yeah, of course, because the movies are important. But so on a grading scale, let's see. Writing-wise, I give Brian Michael Bendis a 2. Absolute 2. It's, for me, 2 is like right below meh. The problem is he just basically, 2 becomes lazy. He's just damn lazy in this one. And the only saving point, of this issue that I basically tell people is pretty spot on is Frank Cho's art. I'm a mark for Frank Cho. I love his art. I mean, some of his splash pages he does, I really don't pay attention to the dialogue, which
because
is probably a
butts.
Good thing.
Because of the way he draws butts.
Well, not only that. I mean, dude, the way he draws, like, sentinels coming in.
Yeah.
And just blowing shit up.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Oh, it's very pretty.
It's very nice. And it takes away from the fact that Bendis' writing is very wordy.
Mm.
Like, if you look at some of the panels, I mean, he just drags on.
Yeah.
The art saves it. So, art-wise, I would give it a 4. Overall, the book is a meh. It's a 3.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that there's Marvel fans out there, and people bash me for saying, oh, you always bash Marvel, Dave. And I'm like going, well, I want to find something good. So I'm going to basically tell you guys out there, go ahead, pick it up. The only way we can actually truly judge this is if we see it to the very end.
Yeah.
Just like with Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron was meh. It had a really good premise. It just ended very badly. So this one has a very, very, very redundant premise. So I'm hoping he can go up. So overall a 3. So off to who's up next? Because I'm used to actually seeing Tony.
Yeah, okay. Next up is going to be Chris. And Chris, what do you got for us today?
What I have for you today is Justice League / Dark Side number 1 or Justice League 23.1.
Ah, yes, Villains Month.
Yes, Villains Month. We're entering Villains Month now. We're at the point ones this time.
Wait a minute. They stole a page from Marvel.
Yes, they did. They stole a page from Marvel and started doing point issues that I don't get it.
Here's the thing. They're not calling them one-shots. The reason that they do the point one is because it makes it easier on those comic book retailers who have box pulls.
Why do we need to make it easier for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Why not easier for us?
But no, I mean, think about it. Like, if you, because essentially it's still Justice League, right?
Yeah.
But it's a supplemental issue, but it's not a one shot. Whereas right. In the past they did one shots. And with one shots, you had to be on top of what was going into your box to get the one shot pulled for you. It's like the annuals. The annuals don't get pulled, right? But with a 23.1, the way that Diamond and DC did it essentially means that we get a a notification that it goes into your box.
Now, Brian, like Brian, capitalist. I'm going to call a hypocrite here because I remember a showback.
I hate it. No. I hate the fact that they're using 0.1, 0.2, and 0.3.
Yes.
But in this case, it actually makes sense because these aren't necessarily in continuity. They're in continuity, but they focus on a particular villain, right?
Right.
So, as opposed to the Marvel point ones,
okay,
which are still in continuity, supplemental stories, and might as well just be called issue number 24, not 23.1, this makes sense to call it issue 23.1 because it's only happening for a month. This is not going to be an issue. It wasn't going to be issue 23, 24, and 25. It's not a three-month thing. It's a one-month thing where this lasts.
And it's not focusing on the Justice League. It's focusing on a totally separate character.
Right. It's focusing on one of the villains from the Justice League. So it absolutely...
A prominent villain from...
Right. From each one of the titles,
series,
whatever.
Yeah.
But it actually makes perfect sense to do it this way and to number it the way that they did because it's not a three-month-long or a four-month-long thing. So you don't want to have Justice League number 24, 25, and 26 all come out week. Yeah. You want to have 0.1, 0.2, 0.3 because essentially in Forever Evil, you don't have to read these comics to know what's going on.
You just got
to
buy every issue in one single month. Are you guys up to do that?
Well, and actually, with a lot of them, you have to buy three or four issues of each title in the same month.
Thankfully, and hopefully, actually, most of this stuff won't really connect so that you won't necessarily have to buy every single villain issue that comes out in September. I wouldn't agree with that anyway. You know, like, pick the villains that you like. In this particular case, we're reviewing Darkseid, which I really like. Darkseid's title is called Apotheosis, is the title of this storyline, and it's written by Greg Pak, art by Paolo Sequeira, and Neto Diaz.
That's using that Filipino tongue.
Yeah, right? I got that going for me.
God, that sounded bad.
Well, we know you love your Filipino tongue, David.
Yes.
Anyway, this issue opens up with...
so dirty.
This issue opens up with a bunch of the old gods just sort of messing around on... I'm guessing it's sort of this pre-apocalypse.
Talk into your mic, rookie. Come on.
I got this.
Don't worry. This is like, what, his second show?
Third. Yeah, man.
Third?
Technically.
Be easy on him.
The second one to actually air.
Be easy on him.
I'm not going to go easy on him.
Come on, man.
Bitch.
All right. That's fine. I'll take that. So this issue opens up with a bunch of gods, a bunch of the old gods, because as we know, Darkseid is a new god.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. In sort of a pre-apocalypse world, very Earth-like. And Darkseid actually starts out as a little farmer boy. Actually, he's gigantic and gray. But
he's a huge gray farmer.
He's a huge gray farm boy.
Straight out of the pages of 300.
Yeah. No, he really is. He's gigantic. But he's a farm boy who is pissed off at the old gods. He just doesn't like the fact that the old gods treat this planet like it's their playground, running around, causing chaos, killing off all of these people. So he actually takes it upon himself to whisper sweet nothings into their ear to make them go to war with each other. That's kind of badass, actually. I really enjoyed this issue, just to show the sort of conniving nature of his rise to power.
Well, it's one of those things where Darkseid has always been kind of viewed as like this big hulking brute. But when in reality, he's actually a manipulative fuck, probably on the same level of intelligence as Lex Luthor.
True.
If not smarter, actually.
Well, he's older.
Yeah.
So there's more there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But, I mean, it shows the rise of the new gods, the death of the old gods, and the old gods' reliance on prayers and everything like that. And, essentially, the new gods just stealing all of their power. It was really kind of epic, you know, to see it spread over, like, three pages or whatever of their entire destruction. But it was just, it was beautifully drawn. I really appreciate the art that Sequeira and Diaz had given us here. You know, it's really beautiful stuff.
The thing that I'm wondering is, do you think it does a good homage to Jack Kirby? Because this was Jack Kirby's story.
Oh,
if you think about it beforehand.
Absolutely.
The
New Gods were a Kirby story, for those of you that didn't know.
Yeah.
And it was, what, 9 issues was the New Gods original? 8 or 9 issues was the original New Gods story.
Right.
And it was epic. Epically, epically epic.
Yeah.
And
they skim over a lot of the origin and everything. And it's just nice for them to sort of show this glimpse into the past.
And what I actually like, because I read that issue, what I liked about it was that, I don't know if you guys remember when Perez and Wolfman did the history of the DC Universe
right,
in 2 issues.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Back in the late 80s, mid to late 80s.
They did, like mid 80s.
Yeah, they did the history of the DC Universe, and they did the same kind of thing where they took these huge storylines and like compounded them, but they went even further and did it into like two panels, a page. It was the entire thing, and it was really, really good the way that they did it, and I kind of got that same nostalgic feel for that as I did in the first three pages here, because of course, you know, being a huge DC fan, the New Gods are one of those things that I'm like, yeah, that's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It's like ancient Greek mythology with, you know, Kronos and all of that bullshit.
Yeah.
Just kind of thrown into the DC universe.
Yeah.
And in reading, you know, Perez and Wolfman's History of the DCU, it was the same thing. And of course, they brought that back here 2 years ago with the DC universe. They did another history thing, but that was like another 10 issues. They stretched it out again into like 10 issues. And so to see it in three pages is actually really impressive.
Yeah. I enjoyed it too. The pacing, like I have some issues with pacing. They started off almost like it was going to be a little bit slow. And then at like a breakneck pace showed the entire fall of the Old Gods. I was just like, whoa, like this is pretty quick.
Right.
I would have liked to see another issue with this, but I can understand them not wanting to dwell as much.
Right.
Because you want to get to the juice. You want to get to the action. You want to get to, you know, all the
stuff.
Wait,
there's Jews in the book?
There's Jews. There's Jews all over the book.
Wait, I thought he was reviewing Darkseid, not Uber.
Oh.
I haven't read Uber.
It's about Nazis.
Oh, yeah. Is it about Nazis?
Yeah, it's about
Luke. Oh, yeah. I remember Nazis. You guys talking about that.
See Kyle.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay, anyway, so on this book, man, you tell us about the first three pages. What happens in the rest of the book?
The rest of the book, it essentially just tells the story of this other trickster, actually, because they try to set up Darkseid as being that guy who was able to take out the Old Gods by using his cunning, using his, you know, his ability to trick them, basically.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this storyline actually follows another trickster, because apparently every generation has one. Every generation has, what did they call it? They called it, I can't remember. I just read the issue.
You just read it too, huh?
Anyway, it's this particular trickster getting bored, basically, and trying to mess with Darkseid, you know? And Darkseid chasing him through, like, these different dimensions where he finds the Justice League and finds Superman.
Oh, and that explains why he shows up.
Right. Like, he just sort of falls out from nowhere, you know, and it kind of just explains how he just rips into, you know, the...
Are you talking about the Chaos Bringer?
Yeah, the Chaos Bringer.
Cairo?
Yes.
Cairo.
Cairo?
Cairo.
Like Egypt?
No, Cairo, like K-A-I.
Is it Kayo?
Kayo.
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 What up, yo?
Yo, bitch.
Now, the one thing I did want to get your thoughts on, Chris, was the fact that what do you think of... Everyone's been kind of talking about it already among fans,
mm-hmm.
but the total redesign of Darkseid.
I appreciate the redesign of Darkseid. I mean, they really haven't, you know, deviated from what was set before. I mean, it looks essentially the same. Just
he does. He looks almost identical to what he used to look like. He's a little more streamlined, I think, now.
Yeah.
Which would actually make sense.
Yeah.
Considering that it's a suit that he's wearing.
Right.
Like, it's not his body.
No.
Which I think is actually a point of contention and something that people are confused about.
Yeah.
In that over the last 15 years, we've only ever seen Darkseid in that body.
Yeah.
We haven't seen an origin story for Darkseid in forever.
And yeah,
and
that's
so
what...
people just thought that was his body, but it's not.
It's a suit that he's wearing. Yeah.
Because his body is actually fragile.
Yeah.
He's strong as fuck. But
he's fragile.
But he's fragile. It's kind of like Lex and Lex's super suit.
Forged out of the fall of the Old Gods. Anyway, like, I mean, it shows that first battle between Darkseid and the Justice League and, you know, his almost obsession, really, with Superman and how powerful he is.
Well, it's his obsession. It's his obsession with being the most powerful being.
Yeah.
Ever.
And having to deal with that.
Right, which is why him and Superman always kind of had, like, this epic kind of battle thing going on between the two of them.
Right.
Because Superman is the strongest thing in the universe.
Yeah.
But so is Darkseid.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when a rock and a hard place meet.
Right.
You know?
And that's why I want to ask you, Brian, is like, do you think that Darkseid is the proper nemesis for Superman? Or are people right that Lex Luthor should be it?
Here's my thing with Darkseid. The problem with Darkseid is that all he wants is power.
Yeah.
Right? Superman and Lex both want the same thing.
Yeah.
They want to protect humans. But they go about it in opposite ways,
okay.
Which is why they're villains, which is why it works.
Why it works.
That's why Lex Luthor is a stronger adversary for Superman, and they're both locally, they're both located on Earth.
Yes, uh-huh. Let's talk to Smith, the Superman lover.
Well, no, I mean, I'm just saying. Like, I mean, it just makes sense. Like, Darkseid, yes,
Kal-El.
Darkseid is is an incredibly powerful nemesis for Superman, and incredibly intelligent, just like Superman is incredibly intelligent.
Right.
But they've already in the New 52 stated that Lex Luthor is the smartest person in the known
world.
Universe. He's the smartest person.
The known universe, really?
That's what he claims, at least.
Well.
And
greatest criminal mind of his time.
His time.
All time.
Of all time.
All time. But, you know, so it's one of those things where I think Darkseid's a formidable foe, and I think he's a good foe for the Justice League as a whole, because he's bigger than life.
And that's why I always wondered was because,
Right.
I always thought Darkseid was a Superman villain.
Well, Darkseid has predominantly been a Superman villain, but they've switched it over, and he's now a Justice League villain.
Yeah, he's now
and
like
I'm okay
super
with
powerful.
That. I think it makes more sense for him to be a Justice League villain.
Yeah.
It really does. It's, what's the dude's name in the gauntlet guy in Marvel?
Oh, Thanos.
Thanos and Darkseid are the same person.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
look the same. Their character design is the same.
Their quest for power is the same.
Right, but you would never call Thanos, like, a Thor bad guy or an Iron Man bad guy.
No, Thanos is...
Thanos is an Avengers bad guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so Darkseid is essentially the counterpart to Thanos in the DC universe.
So that makes sense, yeah.
Anyway.
I always respected that pre-52 also. Darkseid was just kind of that looming shadow over, like, everything that was Earth and good.
Right. He's like, I could crush you at any moment.
Yeah, but I won't.
Because I want Superman.
Right.
Right. Anyway, what do you give it on a grade, Chris, for art?
On a grade, as far as the art, I'm going to go ahead and give it a 4. I think it was beautifully drawn, actually. The way that they portrayed the old gods, the way that, you know, the just throwback to, you know, the first few issues of Justice League, New 52. It was all done pretty well. I'm going to say 4.
And the writing?
As far as writing, it's very simple. It's very simplistic stuff. You know, it's quick read. You know, it's very, very quick. So I'm going to give it 3.5. You know, it's passable.
Fair enough. All right, guys. Well, what I'm bringing you this week is DC Comics' big event. Everything that, well, Chris just talked about kind of ties into is Forever Evil.
Woohoo!
A new book from the New 52. It's written by Jeff Johns, obviously one of the favorites here at Atomic Fallout Society. And art's by David Finch. And then colors are by Richard Friend.
I like him.
David Finch is probably the best artist DC has in their stable right now.
That's saying
arguable.
A lot. Capullo?
Capullo's good, but Capullo can only draw Batman.
Manipal's
good, but once again, draws the Flash. I could not see him drawing as many characters as David Finch has to draw. David Finch has had to draw more characters than either one of those guys.
Right.
Because he's been doing the Batman stuff. He did the Brightest Day stuff.
Yeah.
He's drawn probably every character in the DC New 52 at least once.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other artist that's had to do that.
That's true.
I really don't.
I'm trying to think of it. And,
so,
yeah.
Mankey.
Either way. Yeah, Mankey's done quite a bit, but not as consistently.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with David Finch on the art here, I'm just going to go ahead and give it the grades real quick before I actually get into the review. The writing on this one, it's Jeff Johns, man. It's a 4.5. Like, fuck it. It's Jeff Johns. It's 4.5. David Finch's art gets a 4.5 as well. This book is almost perfect. I'm not a big fan of giant crossover events. I'm not a big fan of events in general. You know, I think that if you do a storyline that crosses over with 3 books, okay, that's fine. Superman, Superboy, Supergirl. Cool. When they did the Death of the Family thing, it made sense. 1 book or 2 books from each one.
Yeah, because it's the Batman family.
That makes sense. It's the Batman family. That makes sense to do. Even when they did the Trinity War with the Justice League books.
Right.
It was 6 books total. Not a big deal. With Forever Evil, you've got 52 villain titles. And Forever Evil. That's a lot of shit to read. Okay.
Yeah, but wouldn't there be 52 issues of villains?
Well, of course, there has to be. That's their theme. Now, of course, this one opens up on probably one of my favorite panels I've ever seen. It's fucking Lex Luthor's eye. That's all it is.
His green eyes.
Finch draws Luthor exactly how he should look. He draws Luthor.
You mean like Walter White?
We'll talk about that later.
Exactly.
But, younger version of Walt. And, anyway, I love Finch's art. Now, of course, it's Jeff Johns, so there's a lot of words. There's a lot of words in the book. And that's one of those things. that you just kind of have to get used to. But you see Korg.
But at least
in this
the
one.
Words make a difference.
They do. They absolutely you know, do. The words actually matter. Now, of course, in this issue, this is kind of the introduction to what's going on with Forever Evil and why we're focusing on the villains. And you see some really like messed up stuff happen in this issue to heroes, to Lex, to Korg. To Ted Kord.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not.
Yeah.
You see, of course, the Rogues.
I'm the spoiler.
You know what the Rogues are, right, Chris? You found out what the Rogues were. Do you know?
Of course I know what the Rogues are.
Okay. Cool. You see the Rogues in this one, which is actually pretty cool.
I can't believe you.
And then about halfway through the book, you get the big payoff as to what the fuck is going on. And it's probably one of the coolest payoffs I've ever seen. I mean, honestly... Second favorite panel in the entire book right here. And in the dead center of the book, you get a giant fold-out, which if,
everyone loves fold-outs.
If I was one of those people that actually tore up my comic books, I might actually frame this.
It's a beautiful
It's
giant.
Absolutely
it is a beautiful
gorgeous.
Really
the colors, the line work, it's amazing. The Two-Face is just sick.
Yeah, so
but anyway,
beautiful.
You get some more bad news in regards to the Justice League. And just some really messed up stuff happening and where everybody's going with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that I could.
You really don't want to spoil this.
I really don't.
Dude,
really
but that
don't.
Last page. That last page
The
was
last
awesome.
Panel is one of those things where we just had the talk about Lex and Darkseid and what is what. That last page tells me everything I need to know about where they're going with Forever Evil.
Yeah.
It tells me everything I need to know. I'm super fucking stoked for it. And the last page totally got me. Of course, this
I
one,
think it's an irony, really.
It's a very ironic thing that happens on the last panel. And, of course, this one is called Forever Evil Issue 1 Nightfall, which bothers me a little bit. But I understand why they're calling it that.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense. Because for those of you familiar with the Rogues Gallery of Superman villains, there is one villain that cannot stand our yellow sun. So, for those of you listening that know who I'm talking about, don't tell your friends. Make them read the issue.
Exactly.
And you'll understand exactly what I was talking about. And also, if you've seen the variant covers for this issue, you'll also know what the middle payoff is. But that's okay, because that means you were in a comic book store today, on new release day, the day that you should be in a comic book store every week. But anyway, you also then get kind of the breakdown of which 52 covers there are. For those of you that have not pre-ordered them from your comic book store, I would suggest doing so. There was a very short allocation on a couple of these issues, but I'm not going to tell you which ones because I don't want to fuel the speculation.
But there you go.
You're going to tell us, though, right?
I'll tell you three. Yeah. Anyway,
the air.
Then the last page actually shows you how they did the 3D covers.
Mm.
It shows you how they did it for the most part.
Again,
which
though, it's
the pieces. The
old 90s thing.
You know what, though? It's
not.
It's not
done exactly the same way that they did them back then.
Not at all. And see, here's the other thing. Yes, there's a 2D version and a 3D version. Yeah. The 2D version will be a dollar less. Okay? But print runs are essentially the same. So it's not like it was in the 90s where they're like, oh, it's a super collectible issue. Super low print run. We only did 2.5 million. Wait, what? Like, there's a huge difference there. Now, of course, I believe next week is Joker's Daughter comes out, which is supposed to be phenomenal. The Joker came out this week, which we did not review. Darkseid came out this week. We also got, Poison Ivy came out. Two-Face came out. What else was there this week?
Grodd.
Oh, Bizarro.
Grodd came out.
Grodd came out. Cyborg Superman came out.
Oh, yeah.
Desaad was... Came out.
Who?
By the way.
For Earth 2.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Grodd came out today.
Grodd or Grodd?
Grodd.
Grodd. Sorry. Grodd. And.
Do you know who the Rogues are?
I do. Oh, and Count Vertigo was the other one I feel I'm missing. Oh, and Deadshot.
Deadshot.
And Creeper. Jesus, a lot of them came out today.
They did, didn't they?
Yeah,
what
anyway.
Is Deadshot supposed to be? Is Deadshot supposed to be.
He's a Batman. Batman
no,
and
he's
Robin?
A Justice League of
he's
America.
Is
villain.
He? Oh, yeah, Justice League
he's
of
Justice
America.
League of America villain.
I know the Green Arrow one came out. I don't
that
know
was
which one.
Count Vertigo.
That's Count Vertigo?
Count Vertigo was the Green Arrow one. Poison Ivy was on Detective. Oh, Relic was from Green Lantern this week. Then we also got Ventriloquist from Dark Knight. And we got Two-Face from Batman and Robin. Then you had Joker from, of course, Batman. I'm most excited for Batman and Superman Doomsday.
Oh, yeah.
I cannot wait for
that. That one should be good.
Cyborg Superman was part of Action, and Bizarro was part of Superman. Grodd.
Thank you.
Was part of The Flash.
You seen that look?
And Earth 2's, what did you say, Desaad? Is that
Desaad, yeah.
Am I saying that right? Desaad? Okay, and Creeper was part of Justice League Dark.
Now, Brian, actually, one thing I want to ask you. Off the air, I actually asked you this, and your answer surprised me.
What's that?
When I mentioned, oh, you're not covering Cyborg Superman.
No.
Because I know that you said that in the past, everyone knows, that your favorite thing was Doomsday.
Yeah, absolutely. And Doomsday was my favorite thing. Yes.
And I was like going, he's not covering Cyborg Superman. And then you said, oh, he's not my favorite. And I'm like going,
Cyborgs, okay, of the four Supermen,
yeah,
during the whole Death of Superman, Return of the Super, or Reign of the Superman, and then Return of Superman storyline, my least favorite of those four was Cyborg Superman.
Really?
Now, why?
He was my absolute least favorite.
Even with Steel. Because Steel wasn't
I
that great.
I loved Steel. Are you kidding me? I loved Steel because Steel never pretended to be Superman, and yet everyone still thought he was. He even told people, he's like,
true.
I'm not him. I am not him. They're like, yes, you are. He's like, I'm black.
Did
I'm
he actually
black.
Say that?
No, he didn't actually say that.
Did he throw up arms and go, I'm black.
No, but
I am not
but that's,
Superman.
Like, I would always imagine him like going home at the end of a long day, taking off taking off the Steel outfit in his shed, in his backyard, and then, you know, walking out from back there and walking up to the house going, I'm fucking black. How the fuck are you going to think I'm
Does
Superman?
Does he look in the reflection of his own mask?
Well, and not only that, but like the Steel mask that he had looked like him.
Yeah.
It was like the worst costume ever aside from a pair of glasses and a curly Q. Like, I mean, seriously, it looked just like him. And so Steel, I thought, was phenomenally awesome. The kid I loved because he was such a smart-ass little fucker. Like,
he's a douchebag.
He was. He was a total
like the
douchebag.
Of douchebag.
He was. He was awesome. He was like, I'm going to be on TV.
Yeah, he was like,
I'm
going to
wear a
Superman.
Jean jacket and
like
one
that
earring.
Kid you like, wanted to slap.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, is that an earring, bro?
And I loved that they put him in there right before they gave a Superman with a mullet.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was phenomenal. And then, of course, the Eradicator was not one of my favorites at the time, but then what they did with him in the pages of Supergirl and then the War of the Supermen kind of changed my opinion of the Eradicator, where, you know, they used him as a fucking nuclear bomb to blow up fucking New Krypton, which was awesome. Like, I'm sorry, it was fucking sick. And so my opinion of Eradicator changed. Of course, it was a total dick move to blow up Coast City, but whatever. And the Cyborg Superman was just kind of, like, I never... In reading the issues when we didn't know if Superman was real,
uh-huh.
I never thought Cyborg Superman could have been him.
No, absolutely not.
I always thought the Eradicator or the Kid
were Superman.
You know?
They still like tied them all together. I mean,
they did.
The Eradicator and
the Eradicator essentially they tied in. Yeah. They tied in
Black suit
the
Superman.
Kid and then Steel. They tied in as well.
Yeah,
and they told you how John Henry Irons
became Steel.
And I still think that his suit was one of the greatest things ever. Like, he was the original Cyborg. Like, fuck you, Cyborg. I love you. You're cool and shit. But John Henry Irons came way before you.
But Iron Man came way before him.
Iron Man's a fucking putz. Iron Man's an alcoholic fuck who chases women and would be nothing without his suit because he has no moral fucking compass.
But doesn't that
Whereas
make him
Steel
cool?
became and built the suit because he
Edgy
had a moral compass.
Cool.
Iron Man built the suit to save his own life.
That's
why he built the suit. Steel built the suit to save other
people's
lives.
Save other
lives.
People.
Thus, he's a fucking hero. Iron Man's a douchebag with a lot of money.
Like Batman?
Batman's not a douchebag. He's just a fucking...
Militant jerk.
He needs to be put on some fucking Xanax.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, that's
and
true.
Maybe some Zoloft and some Prozac.
Maybe some tranquilizers, man. Like
tranquilizers, dude.
Some. Affleck.
Affleck.
Now,
Matt Damon.
We'll discuss that in a second because since I am back, I guess it's time to actually bring up industry news as usual.
That's cool. We got about 20 minutes, just so you know.
Good. Let's make this quick. First, one of the biggest points of news that I found the past 2 weeks.
That's all, folks. Jesus Christ, dude! Come on, spit that shit out, son.
Sorry, it's been 2 weeks. You don't know what I've seen, but anyways,
I was there.
So, The Hugo Award was just announced, and it actually went to Saga.
Which is exactly who won the Eisner.
Exactly. And but I think this means more than the Eisner, because the Hugo Award...
The Hugo Award started at the same time as the Eisner.
But the Hugo Award literally encompasses more than just comics.
Yeah, I know. It's
it encompasses, like, literally books.
Yeah.
And TV, everything. And the fact that Saga beat pretty much everything in media?
Yeah.
That's pretty
Well,
that's
and
pretty
it should
hefty.
Have, dude. Saga, you know, we've been champions of Saga since issue one.
And what I want to ask you guys about this particular article is Saga worth it? I mean, think about it. Think honestly about it.
What else was written this year that was better than Saga?
That's what I'm trying to think. Is
I
like,
mean, talking literary or not, I mean, we got 50 Shades of Fuck You.
Yeah. Even TV. Think of TV. Anything that was great that came out on TV.
I mean, Breaking Bad was really good, but it's four seasons in. It's not new. Well, five seasons, I guess. Four and a half.
That's what I mean. Is like, I mean, did Saga deserve it?
Like, I think, honestly, the best TV show right now, I think everybody can agree, is Breaking Bad.
Yep. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. The best movie that came out so far this year, writing-wise. There's really nothing out there for me, personally. I mean, I'm sure there's some independent movie that I haven't seen yet that was probably fucking phenomenal. I don't know.
Nothing really, budget ones,
nothing
surprisingly.
Nothing comes out and kind of smacks you in the face with its dick, you know? Nothing is amazing.
I hope not.
Right? So then you look at you know, novels, whatever. There's nothing.
There's nothing
but
there.
But what has literally crossed platforms?
And that's what I'm wondering. I mean,
you've got Saga.
Does this mean Saga is probably going to break the mold and actually we'll see Saga TV or Saga
I don't
movie?
Think, I don't
I
think
hope not.
We will not see Saga TV. It's Vaughn, so we could potentially see Saga movie. We could see Saga TV. I mean, he's been in talks before for the other two big ones.
Yeah.
Why the Last Man and Preacher both are in development as we speak. So, and Vaughn does, of course, have his... He takes part in, he writes scripts and everything else. I think he worked on Lost for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, he did.
And he's also been working on Under the Dome.
Yes.
So he does TV Beautiful work. Show. Say what?
Beautiful show.
Under the Dome?
I like Under the
Did
Dome.
You read the book?
No.
Okay. Then that's why you like the show. Don't get me wrong. I watch the show religiously, but mainly because I like to bitch. Anyway, it's a good show. It's not a bad show. They've just completely fucking destroyed the character.
But, I mean,
of
that, just,
I like it.
That just says a lot, doesn't it, guys?
No, absolutely. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan is probably one of the most talented writers in comic books right now, if not the most talented writer in comic books right now.
Would you even say he's even talented, not just for comic books, just writing in general?
No, absolutely. That's what I mean. He's just a talented writer. Brian K. Vaughan is as good as the British guy just came out with it, Neil Gaiman. I think Brian K. Vaughan is a younger version of Gaiman. Or Gaiman. I don't know. How is it?
Gaiman?
It's Gaiman. Yeah.
Happy Man.
So off to the next article that
it's
actually...
Hope Man, bitch.
Hope Man? Oh, man. But anyways, so some news about Justice League 3000, which is a title that's in the horizon, which sounds really interesting.
Well, here's the deal with Justice League 3000. They've already brought us now Batman Beyond the Universe.
Yes.
Yeah. Which I reviewed
and
for
you
the
reviewed,
show.
And it was a good one.
And I really liked it. I'm excited for a 3000 universe. I mean, I know that Marvel did it with Marvel 2099, and they had a couple books that were really good and a bunch of books that sucked the big fucking donkey dick.
Yes.
So hopefully DC stays away from that and just does select books like they have with the Beyond universe, where you have Batman and then you have Superman, and that's really it. And even with the Beyond universe stuff, it's still just kind of those two.
Yeah.
And that's the way it should be, because those are your moneymakers. You know what I mean? Like, you don't go to the strip club to see the fat chick. You go to see the one that has nice tits. Right?
I look for the one that cries.
Well, she's the one that'll probably sleep with you at the end of the night.
That was dark.
I look for the one that tells me she's trying to earn some milk money for her
possessed
kid.
But news out of Justice League 3000, one that actually has a lot of fans worried is the fact that Kevin Maguire was taken off of the project. Taken off, but he also kind of left on his own volition.
Well, you know what? That's kind of been the story with DC over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Is artists and writers just quitting, leaving, whatever. And so here's my thought process with that. Have the books suffered because somebody left? Honestly? Honestly, have any of the books suffered because someone left?
No.
Right?
You've gotten surprises, actually. I mean,
you've gotten surprises.
Exactly.
You still have that deadline.
Right.
guys will quit and someone will still have to pick up the slack. And
you're
sometimes
right.
that those creative juices.
Yep.
Juices.
And sometimes it actually works better for the title.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. And so having somebody removed from a book when it comes to DC at this point does not worry me anymore. Yes, it did originally when I was like, what the fuck is going on at DC? And then I'm like, oh, they're actually still pretty good. We're good.
Yeah.
You know, whereas at Marvel, you just get 9 different teams on the same book.
Yeah.
So that is true. Oh, my God. That is so true.
Well, that's the difference.
Why do we hate Marvel so much?
We don't hate
because
Marvel.
It sucks.
They do suck. Okay. I swear to God, if you talk about fucking Sharknado 2, I will quit the goddamn show.
No, I'm not going to talk about Sharknado 2. I'm just going to actually quickly talk about 2 kickstarting projects.
2 Kickstarters?
Because
Kickstarter?
Apparently, if you cover Kickstarter, you're a loser.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, guys. I totally forgot. If you use Indiegogo or Kickstarter to get something off the ground because, you know, it's your first project and you really don't have a name for yourself yet, that makes you a loser. Yeah.
So I just want to actually put out these 2 Kickstarters out there. One is actually Frenzy coming off. It's basically a art project that focuses nothing on shark, everything but sharks.
Everything but sharks?
Everything regarding sharks. Sorry. Okay. I'm having a Tony complex.
So it's like a Shark Week movie.
Pretty much.
Nice.
Only better.
Shark Week.
Only better. And then the next one is actually Zombie BC, which is basically cavemen and zombies.
Beautiful.
Cavemen versus zombies.
Maybe even dinosaurs cavemen. And zombies. So that could be actually really good.
I would love to see a T-Rex like fucking zombie. But you know what, Dave? You know what? You talked about these 2 Kickstarters, and you failed, neglected. You chose not to talk about our very own Indiegogo project.
Well, see, I was leaving that up to Brian.
So here's what we've got, guys. Jacob O'Neill, who you guys will know from the Goram Nerd Hour and the other, like, I don't know, 412 shows that he does on this network.
I know him.
Yeah, you do. But Jacob and I wrote a movie, a little short film, about 30 minutes or so. And David is actually going to shoot this motherfucker for us.
Yes, I am.
David's going to shoot it for us. And
because Brian owns my soul.
Of course. And you know, Dave has worked on award-winning programs before, like Western X.
Oh, absolutely.
And, and so because of Dave's work with Michael Flores, that's how we've decided that we want to do this project and we want to do it right. You know,
yeah.
You guys all heard about when we did the horror compilation thing, which was supposed to look cheap and supposed to look like VHS. And so we literally had a budget of, what was it, Dave? I think you spent $300 and I spent $300 and that was our movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So about $600 was the budget on that piece of shit.
Nice.
I'm sorry. It's not a piece of shit. I actually really like it. But it's
love
coming
the baby.
Out. It's September 17th is the release date for that, correct?
Yes.
No.
Death by VHS
yes.
will
Death
be released.
Death by VHS is September 17th. And you can pre-order it now from Amazon, Google, Best Buy, Kmart,
iTunes even.
iTunes has it.
Wow.
And here locally, Zia Records.
That's some pretty big stuff.
Zia
yeah,
Records
not
gonna
bad
have
for
it.
A hack.
Right. Oh, and Blockbuster. Not Blockbuster.
Blockbuster?
Best Buy. Best Buy was the one. Yeah,
oh,
Best Buy.
Okay.
Redbox.
Oh, and Redbox. It's also going to have a Redbox release, right?
Nice.
How awesome is that? Like, you're going to be able to go up there and go, what the fuck is this thing? Rent it for $1 and then be like, I don't know what the fuck I just watched. But you'll love it, especially Lepus, which is the part that I play.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, so Jake and I wrote this thing. And we've already got actually a letter of intent from an actor. The problem is, you know, this is a little bit different than the last thing that we did, where it was just a bunch of our friends essentially shooting in my backyard. This one, this one, we do need to actually have a little bit of a budget. And so we are doing an Indiegogo project right now. You can find it on all of our Facebook pages, but it's under, if you search for Terrestrial, it'll pop up. Or you can just go to Indiegogo.com/projects/terrestrial-2.html.
How do you spell terrestrial?
T-E-R-R-E-S-T-R-I-A-L.
Look at
time.
That spelling.
T-E-R-R-E-S-T-R-I-A-L.
One more time.
T-E-R-R-E-S-T-R-I-A-L.
Nice.
Matt Damon.
But also, guys, we're going to be doing the Indiegogo project right.
No,
we're not
going to
be wasting your time.
We are. We're not going to be wasting your time there, guys. And, you know, there are actually some pretty cool things that you can get by helping us out and, you know, giving us a donation.
Exactly.
I think there's a $10, a $25, a $50, and a $100.
I forgot what we put for $100.
Tier. I don't know either.
a part in the movie?
No, I actually think $100 was you can be an extra if you're local and you can be on the podcast.
Oh,
Jake and
yeah.
I. You can
Jake
also be on the podcast as a special contributing guest.
Am I just going to be there anyway?
Well, you're going to be an extra anyway. All you fuckers are. But anyway, so I mean, that's what's going on with the Indiegogo thing, guys. And so, you know, I know that there are some people have some qualms with Indiegogo. And you know, honestly, dude, they're valid. They're valid things. They really are. When it comes to somebody like Zach Braff asking for fucking $2 million, like, go fuck yourself, dude. You're a douchebag. But this Indiegogo is literally so that we can get our start. Like, it is what it is. You know, I'm a single father. Jacob is a taxi cab driver. You know, you're unemployed 90% of the year. And so this isn't one of those things where we can just be like, oh, we can put our own money into it. You know, it doesn't work that way.
You have to get a budget somehow.
Exactly. And so for us to get a budget on this one, we kind of need help, you know?
And at this point, it's not panhandling.
Yeah, I heard.
It's an investment.
You guys are being investors.
Right, of course. And you will all get a credit on the movie. You will all get a copy of the movie if you donate, which is huge. Like, that's awesome. And you get some signed swag. How cool is that? Like, you can be like, hey, I knew these fuckers before they got famous.
You get your name on something. That's
exactly.
Cool.
Exactly. So anyways, Dave, what else do we have for stories? I'm done talking about myself.
All right. So off to the next one. Well, let's see.
Actually, you know what? Real quick. Let's just do it right now. It needs to be discussed. Yes. We have not talked about it yet on this show. Ben Affleck.
Yes!
Hold on.
Let me just say one thing. I was, like, literally bedridden for 2 weeks, and this news comes across. Not only that, a ton of news comes across movie-wise, but Ben Affleck steals the show.
Well, here's my thoughts, real quick, on Ben Affleck being cast as Batman. Fuck yes.
Really?
Here's
I
why.
Agree with him.
Listen to me and listen carefully. The dude wins Oscars.
Uh-huh.
He's super talented.
Uh-huh.
Right? Daredevil was not his fault.
No, it wasn't.
Okay? Geely, not his fault.
Whose fault was it?
Geely, that's easy, bro. That's easy. It's the same thing as Guy Ritchie with Madonna. Yeah. Not Guy Ritchie's fault. Right? You know what I'm talking about. That horrible, horrible movie that he directed because Madonna wanted to be in it. And all the rest of his shit is fucking genius. Yes. That movie's a piece of shit. Geely, not Ben's fault. Pearl Harbor, not Ben's fault.
No.
Armageddon, awesome movie, fuck you. Makes me cry every time. But no, seriously, like, I mean, Affleck has made...
We win, Gracie.
Sorry.
He's made some very...
Was that your Bruce Willis?
That was the best I got, dude.
For lack of a better term, he has made some poor choices in some of the movies that he has chosen to be in.
Well, I mean, he's explained it in one of his previous movies with Kevin Smith. James Silent Bob Strike Back?
Yeah.
Go back to the well.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what you do. Is this the well, or is this him stretching his legs?
I think this is him stretching, dude. I really do. I think that we're going to get a performance. Here's the thing. Ben Affleck is such a huge comic book fan. We are going to get a performance from him that's going to rival Michael Keaton as Batman.
Yeah, and the thing that I hate, too, is the fact that fans have been like
such uproar
about it.
Here's the other thing, Chris. There were 50,000 letters written to Warner Brothers when they cast Michael Keaton as Batman.
Yes.
Michael Keaton's a better Batman than Christian Bale.
Well, it was a petition with 50,000 names on it.
No. It was 50,000
letters.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. People, and that was before email, guys. So people put a stamp on that bitch and sent it.
Tell them Michael
Keaton. Okay, hold on.
Wait, hold up. And do you remember what everyone said when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay? And
they
understand.
Ripped him apart.
And now, don't get me wrong. I know that there are other people that have been really happy with casting choices that didn't turn out in the best. And I understand that.
George Clooney.
Val Kilmer.
Once again, neither of their faults. Nipples. Okay?
Nipples.
All right, there was no saving those movies.
No.
Period. So,
Nicolas Cage.
Here's my thing. I think with Affleck, The Town was amazing.
It was.
Okay?
I'll agree with you.
Gone, yes. Baby Gone. He directed and wrote that.
But he wasn't in it.
You're right, but his little brother was, and it's the only time Casey Affleck has ever given a performance worth a shit.
Yes.
I don't think that's true at all.
What else has he given a good
performance? Yeah, what else has he done?
He was great in Ocean's 11.
Okay, you know what? Get the fuck out. But no, I mean, seriously, I think that overall, I think Ben Affleck is going to bring more to this role on both sides, because I think with Christian Bale was mediocre at best as Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
He was really good as Batman.
He was good as Batman.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good as Batman.
Voice.
But he was awful as Bruce Wayne. Affleck, on the other hand, is going to give us an older, wiser Bruce Wayne. and he's going to give us the jaw.
That's true.
The that we jaw, were yeah. missing from Christian Bale.
My initial reaction to Ben Affleck. Here's the thing: like Ben Affleck was announced Thursday. What day was that? We had just recorded an episode where we were talking about Ben Affleck and Daredevil.
Yeah.
And the very next day,
they announced him as Batman.
It was 2 weeks ago.
It
was a little bit over a week ago.
Right. So I mean, they announced him, and my initial reaction was like, "What the fuck, really?" But then I thought about it, and I'm like, "Okay, hold on a second." I watched Daredevil. My God. It wasn't the greatest thing he's been in. But you're right. It's not his it's
Yo,
not
he was
his
the
fault.
He was the bomb in Phantoms. Like, for real.
He was.
He was the bomb in Phantoms.
He was. So I just went through the list of shit that he has been in that I've actually seen him in. And he's actually been damn fantastic.
Thank you.
You know, even without Matt Damon at his side.
Well, and honestly, guys, I think he looks worse next to Matt Damon.
Really?
You know, I think he does. I think he looks like a weaker actor next
no,
to Matt
does.
Damon.
Oh,
because
he
Matt
does.
Damon, I'm sorry, Matt Damon is a far superior actor to
Do you think
to
he
ben
could
Affleck.
Have been Batman?
No, he's too short.
What? So was Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton was only, what, 5'8"?
Okay.
Plus, Damon's blonde.
Well, that doesn't matter. They can dye his fucking hair.
No, kill me.
He doesn't have the eyes either, dude.
No, he doesn't.
And he doesn't have that like that American, all-American boy look that Batman has, just
no.
like Superman.
What look does he have?
Matt Damon? Matt Damon?
Matt Damon?
Matt Damon?
Just
Matt
love Damon.
He looks like, a math prodigy that's a janitor.
Oh, really? Really?
You went there, huh?
Applesauce,
bitch.
How you like them apples? Applesauce,
but
bitch. Can't you see I'm counting my money?
But yeah, that was the
you're
one.
A true artist, Gus.
That was the one piece of news that actually breezed right by me after I listened to the first Atomic Fallout Society where I wasn't on. That news comes on, yep. And you guys don't even cover it the next episode.
Nope, we didn't, because here's the deal. In the next episode, we had Jacob here. And I didn't care to hear what Jacob said about Ben Affleck.
Oh,
because Jake and I had actually already discussed it at length, okay. And so I just didn't want to rehash it. But no, and then also, not only that, we got Groot is going to be voiced by Vin Diesel.
Yes.
And Groot's pal,
which works,
Rocket Raccoon,
yeah.
is going to be voiced by none other than, I want to win an Oscar so bad, I will do almost anything except for suck your dick. Bradley Cooper.
But what?
Yeah, Bradley. And you know what? I am okay with Bradley Cooper being the smarmy little Rocket Raccoon.
Ah.
I am, dude. I don't
but
care.
Does
it's
his
a voice.
Voice work, though?
Why wouldn't it? What's a raccoon sound
he just
like,
sounds
bro?
Like a dude. Like, I mean, there's nothing.
Well, who's this? Okay, you know what, guys? Here's the thing, though. Bane should have sounded like a dude.
Yeah.
Okay?
But honestly.
But he didn't.
But
right?
Honestly,
because they did all sorts of fucked up shit to his fucking voice.
Vin Diesel sounds better as Groot.
Oh, hell yeah,
Groot's
he does.
Good.
Hell yes. Vin Diesel is perfect. And I think Bradley Cooper is going to do just fine as long as they don't fucking Alvin and the Chipmunk him.
Exactly.
could you imagine that? Could you imagine that?
Christmas time is here.
Bradley sounds great.
Hey, then, Groot.
And then the other piece of news that I was actually just told prior to this podcast. Was actually, it's a rumor, not an actual story.
Yes.
That, speaking of Breaking Bad,
Bryan Cranston. May or may not be cast as Lex Luthor. And now here's the thing about that.
I like him.
Part of it is that, okay, when Ben Affleck got cast as Batman, we got completely blindsided. No one saw it coming.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So now you're telling me that 6 weeks before Breaking Bad ends, right after you release the news that Batman's going to be, or that Batfleck is happening.
If you say that, I'm having a bad time.
So you say Batfleck is happening. Internet erupts with fucking anger. 70,000 petition goes to the White House because the White House can help you with casting. You
oh, yeah.
Fucking
absolutely.
Twat suckers. Jesus Christ, Americans are fucking stupid.
Ah, thank you, Brian.
Anyway, so that petition goes out. And then we get the news that Cranston's going to be Lex Luthor, and everyone forgets about Affleck and is like, oh my God, Bryan Cranston's the perfect choice for Lex Luthor. Oh, if he's going to be Lex Luthor, I would totally fuck Lex Luthor if it's Bryan Cranston because, oh my God, I love Bad Boys, and he's like so shaved bald. And oh, I just want to run my finger across his bald scalp. Oh my God. Like, seriously, the fanboys
just
lost
like
their shit. Dude, seriously, did you read any of the fucking blog posts about Bryan Cranston
being
Lex Luthor?
Of course I did.
Like, Jesus Christ, you would have thought that he was the second coming of fucking Christ. Christ.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm like going, does he actually fit
he
it?
He came once.
Is it actually
absolutely.
Fair?
Absolutely, I think Bryan Cranston should be Lex Luthor.
Oh, he should.
He absolutely
definitely.
Should.
And, it's better than Mark Strong, who was another person that they
well,
were saying.
And Mark Strong, I think, would have been a good choice for Lex Luthor if he had not been cast as Sinestro.
Yeah. He was a great Sinestro,
yeah,
though.
He was a great... And honestly, I would love to see a Sinestro movie.
Yeah.
Like, fuck the Green Lantern, fuck Ryan Reynolds. I want to see a Sinestro motherfucking movie.
No,
that's
that
what I want to see.
Yeah.
I want to see Sinestro. Fuck the rest of them.
Common as the Green Lantern.
Dude.
Right?
Dude.
You like that, right?
I do like that.
I actually can't take credit. I read that off of a blog.
See, he's getting good.
Somebody getting actually good. Threw that out there, and I'm like, common as the Green Lantern, John Stewart. No shit.
He's too pale.
What, does it really matter, man?
Well, no, because it's Hollywood, and so he's always going to play black.
Yeah.
But, well, except for on, you know.
Wasn't Will Smith going to be Robin at one point?
Oh, God.
You know what? Will Smith can suck my toe. All right? Seriously. Like, fuck that guy.
Your middle toe?
If he goes anywhere near another superhero movie, I will personally drive out to Hollywood and shoot him in the face.
Hancock.
You know what?
Love it.
That first movie, Hancock, that they did was pretty good. The second movie that was Hancock was awful.
What? There's a second?
Watch the movie. It's two fucking movies mashed together.
It's two movies mashed together.
Because think about it. In the first half of the movie, you don't know there's other superheroes, right? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere... I'm a superhero too, and we used to be in love, and we used to get it on, but that made us weak, and so we had to separate. What? Fuck you! What the fuck are you talking about? I thought this was a story about some dude that was a superhero that was a total fucking wanker, and now he's okay because he decided to have a fucking image makeover by the best goddamn actor in Hollywood, Jason Bateman. But no.
Thank you.
Instead, what we get is some half-assed fucking bullshit fucking love story. But oh my God, no, fuck that movie.
But that suffered through that, like, the Act 3 problems that most movies like that.
It's because you had Act 1 and Act 2, and then you had Act 1 and Act 2.
Right.
That's not an Act 3 problem. You got two Act 1s and two Act 2s, nigga. That's the problem. All right? That's the problem.
Two separate movies.
I knew the N-word was going to come up once.
And with that.
Anyways, guys, it was one of those things that we talked about before the show, so I had to throw it in when I got angry.
Absolutely.
So anyways, guys, thank you once again for listening to the Atomic Fallout Society.
You miss me?
On behalf of
I did.
The Beast Man and Lily. And, of course, our fearless and somewhat overworked
absent
leader, Tony the Rock Sabal. This is Professor Brian Smith. Don't forget, you can find us on abnormalentertainment.com, or you can go to atomicfallout.blogspot.com, or look us up on Facebook under Atomic Fallout Society. You can also find me on a couple different shows. David does all of his bullshit, too.
Yep.
And Chris really only has this going for him. It's the only thing that keeps him from killing himself every day is knowing that occasionally, just occasionally, he gets to do the Atomic Fallout
Society.
Oh, that
is not true.
Hey, Brian, what happens if he takes over for me permanently?
If he takes over for you permanently, dude, we'll have to come up with a better nickname than Lily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, guys, we went over on time for the first time in forever. We weren't struggling to finish.
Exactly.
But, you know, I never struggle to finish. Who am I kidding?
I told you. Didn't you guys miss me?
No, we didn't miss you. What we missed was... What did we miss? I'm not sure what we missed.
We missed
anyways,
nothing.
Guys, if
you
listened
say,
to the whole show,
steel?
You didn't miss anything. Oh, and be prepared next week because some new promo photos are coming. Anyways, guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. It's a very twisted tale. Very twisted tale. Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. Welcome to the Atomic Fallout Society. It's a very twisted tale. Very twisted tale.
Head to abnormalentertainment.com for all of our podcasts and blogs. Go to cinemaheadcheese.com for our movie reviews and news. Don't forget our YouTube channels, Abnormal Podcast and Cinema Head Cheese. Get us on Twitter, at Abnormal Podcast, and find all of our shows and Abnormal Entertainment on Facebook. New content 7 days a week from Abnormal Entertainment.
You've been listening to the Abnormal Entertainment Network.